aged in a preaching series, Proclaiming Profiles in Courage, looking at stories of heroes and heroines of the faith. The Bible is just full of courageous people of faith. If you have seen our promotional material, you know that we have decided that there are a number of courageous characters in the Bible, and we want to introduce you to them. One of my favorite theologian preachers is a woman named Barbara Brown Taylor. She's an Episcopalian priest, and she talks about the way that her congregation in Atlanta observed All Saints Day. People were invited to dress as their favorite saint. I don't know if any of you have a favorite saint, or if you could think how you might dress as your favorite saint, but I suspect that most of us have a favorite Bible character. Anybody want to tell me who that is? Joseph? Other favorites? I'm putting you on the spot. Can't even think of them, can you? Yes. Mary, of course, Mary. Well, by the time you've been here every week for the next few weeks, you'll know a lot of the biblical characters, and hopefully a few of them will be your heroes or your favorites. There are so many characters, and their stories are so involved. You might discover what most of us have discovered, that God uses ordinary people. They don't have to be spectacular to begin with. They grow in faith as God continues to invite them to be in service. Well, Abraham and Sarah are the centenarians we're going to learn about today. They lived to the point where they could celebrate their 100th anniversary. Their marriage lasted over 100 years, we believe, and they were considered to be the parents of a great nation. And yet, he was nearly 100 years old before he had any children. And Sarah was in her 90s. But I'm getting ahead of myself. When we look at the story of Abraham and Sarah, we're not just looking at the story of two people, two very old people in the Bible, but we're looking at the whole historical narrative of God's relationship with God's people and how that all evolved. Their story is historical, but not in the same historical way that we talk about our historical characters in the American history, where we memorize presidents and dates and those kinds of things. Most of those are facts. What we have in the Old Testament particularly is stories of God's relationship with the people of Israel. And these two people are carrying the freight, you might say, for that nation for the time. Those of you who've studied Bible study with us with Disciple Bible Study in this congregation, we've done a lot of Disciple Bible Study through the years. One of the key questions that we ask in Disciple Bible Study is, what's the relationship between God and human beings in this story? When we look at this particular story with Abraham and Sarah, we're looking at an editor or writer who we refer to as the Yahwist, who composed and edited over a 100-year period that was covered. When we look at the beginning of this story, if we look back in Genesis, look back in Genesis 12. Do you remember the story about the Tower of Babel? Anybody can remember that story? I see some heads nodding and some hands going up. Was that one of the greater moments in the history of the people of Israel? No. It was a very unhealthy time when they said, look at us, look how great we are, we're going to build this tower all the way up to heaven. Did that end well? Not really. Well, that's kind of the prelude to the story that we're hearing with Abraham and Sarah. Abraham and Sarah were not looking for glory, but God picked them out to celebrate their faithfulness and how God could use them because of their trust in God. I think it's a little dangerous for us to take stories or people from the Bible out of context and not recognize what was going on in the culture when that story was taking place. We don't just pluck them out of the story and pretend that they're in the 21st century. So we need to look at the context for what was taking place in the world in that particular time. We need to locate that story. So it's important for us to remember that this story takes place after the Tower of Babel story, that time of human rebellion. And this was a time of hope, a time of light. Abraham's call is a light shining in the darkness that had been there before. Abraham would show himself to be one who trusted God. The story of people, human beings, estranged from God, that was in that story of the Tower of Babel, gives us the perfect prologue to look at this story of God's chosen people. You probably were listening, I'm hoping, when Dick was reading those passages from Genesis. Let's take a minute to look at the place. Eric has a slide that we'll see. Look at the place where they were called to go. What kind of a place was Canaan? Well, it was already inhabited. It didn't sound like a heavenly place that God would give them as a reward. It was already inhabited. There were established cities, especially in the Fertile Crescent. Altars to Canaanite fertility gods were dotting the landscape. Nomads kept flocks on the hillside. It was not virgin territory. The faith of Abraham and Sarah would be lived out in the midst of a people who had many gods. So this was not virgin territory at all. And what happened, you know, in those days when people had a relationship with God and something significant happened, they would create altars. And Abraham's first altar was created near Shechem, an old Canaanite city with a pagan cultic center. Was located between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. You would not think that the place to put an altar to the one God would be in a place where there were competing gods. But there, Abraham built his first altar. Well, the land of promise didn't turn out to be as promising as they might have thought. They'd barely gotten their tents established when the land experienced famine. And Lot had been traveling with Abraham and Sarah, but there was not enough there to support their livestock. And so Lot left, and Abraham and Sarah continued. And on the side, you can see the arrow that points to the journey where they were going. This is important. They didn't just get invited to travel once. They got invited to travel a number of times. Well, the venture into Egypt was a little difficult because Abraham feared for his life because of his relationship with Sarah. He was trying to kind of take things into his own hands, you might say. And so instead of telling the Pharaoh that Sarah was his wife, he claimed that Sarah was his sister. That meant that Sarah ended up in the harem. Well, obviously, he was lying, and, you know, truth be told, truth always comes out in the end, and the Pharaoh became aware that this was not an accurate depiction of Sarah. He was kind of, sort of, telling a half-truth, because Sarah was the daughter of his father, and yet she was not really, technically, his sister. So you start to see what happens when human beings take things into their own hands and start to say, well, it looks like I'm going to have to help God out. So that ended in disaster. Luckily, they made it out of Egypt with their heads attached and their skin attached. And lo and behold, the Pharaoh gave them more livestock, and they went on their way. But do you know how sometimes when we feel like we're waiting for God to fulfill a promise for us, we feel like we have to take it into our own hands. Instead of being patient and saying, I'm going to be patient and listen to you, God, and wait for you to move. Well, they appeared to lose their faith in that period. Abraham and Sarah, after 10 years of waiting for this promise to be fulfilled, were getting impatient. Sarah started to think that maybe she could help God along. And so she agreed that Abraham would be able to father a child with her handmaiden. This was a fairly common practice in those days. And so Hagar became pregnant and had a child, and they named him Ishmael. Well, as hard as it was for Sarah to be barren and to know that her identity was not really elevated because she didn't have a child, it was harder once Hagar had a child and sort of flaunted it. And instead of her being able to say, oh, what a glorious thing it is that I can be a mother to this child and that Abraham has a child, it turned out not to be a good scene. And so she sort of felt like, we need to get rid of Hagar and Ishmael. Again, what happens when we take things into our own hands? But God is amazing, and God forgives us when we stray and we deviate from the plan and from our faithfulness. Then we heard that amazing story about the three visitors who visited the tent when Abraham and Sarah were out in the desert. They were angels. They were visitors from God who came to communicate a very important message. For no apparent reason, Abraham and Sarah would be the parents of a great nation. You remember that conversation with the three angels, and Abraham's trying to get Sarah to get the meal together, and she's listening as Abraham is sharing the meal with the three strangers, and she hears the conversation that's taking place as she's in the tent, and she hears one of those angels say, within the next year, Sarah will have a child. And she's eavesdropping, and she's laughing, and she practically fell off her stool. I mean, really, this is not something a woman in her 90s expects to hear, and certainly not when her husband is past 100. And yet, a year later, she has given birth to a child, and they have named him Isaac. For laughter. Would you like to be named Laughter? It's not a joke. It's because God has allowed love and pleasure to come to this couple and the fulfillment of this promise that they had been waiting all these years to be fulfilled. I think there are many people who can identify with Abraham and Sarah in their fertility concerns. We know that at least a tenth of the population experiences difficulty conceiving children. We know that there are many people who get disappointed when the things they expect God to do just don't happen. When things come into their lives that they wonder how God could allow this to happen. You know, I mentioned that Adam Hamilton has been speaking to us at annual conference. He's had three appearances when he's led us in some study. And one of the conversations that he shared with us was a conversation with someone who recently returned from war and who really was invited to talk to Adam because he had been a faithful, grown up in the youth group, pretty faithful in Sunday school, and he came back from the war saying, I don't believe in God anymore. And then Adam talked with him, and then he had him film a conversation with him, and he's saying to us in the film, I don't believe in God anymore. I buried four of my best friends in that war. How could God allow something like that to happen? And he speaks for so many of us who have experiences of God that we're wondering, how could this happen? This is not our understanding of how God works. We understand that God is a God who gives us abundantly. And yet, to have four of his dearest friends die and have to bury them didn't fit with what he understood God to do and be. And so they had this lengthy conversation, and he began to explore more fully what it means to be a faithful follower. And I think many of us, when we go through these times of trial, losing a spouse, losing a child, not finding that we're able to do what we thought we could do successfully, facing all kinds of disappointments, many of us know people who've gone through those experiences and said, enough! I'm not going to worship that God anymore. I don't want to have anything to do with that God anymore. And yet, look at Abraham and Sarah. They stayed in the relationship. They respected that covenant between them. I will be your God, you will be my people. That covenant relationship that is so, so important. We know that there are many of our friends and loved ones who face difficulties and are not able to get things resolved. But it's so important for us to trust God as a God of love. And through it all, Abraham did trust God, even though we know there were those moments of deviation. These stories help us to know that God is a loving and forgiving God. God continues to welcome us back into relationship after we have faltered, after we have said, we just can't go there. But God continues to hold out the love and the promise. All of us have trials and tribulations, maybe not as extreme as Abraham and Sarah, but we know that there was more than one occasion when they were invited again into that covenant relationship. What about you? What about your relationship with God? Do you run at the first moment of risk? Can you remain faithful when your faith is tested? Maybe God will ask you to do something challenging. Maybe God will invite you to take on an unpopular cause or befriend a person that you would not normally even want to be talking with. Maybe God will ask you to chaperone an ASP trip. Maybe God will invite you to be a counselor at camp and sleep on the floor or on those hard beds and be interrupted and sleepless those nights when you're there. Maybe God will invite you to be on the accountable leadership board or to be a foster parent or to run for public office. The possibilities are almost limitless of the things that God invites us to. Many of us can testify to what happened when we said yes, and some of us can testify to what happened when we said no thanks. But think about how we grow. I think we get invited. Look in the bulletin every week and see all the opportunities for service. Some of those are quite challenging. You know, last summer after the incident in Sherman Park, many, many people were very distressed. And out of concern for what might be done, there were a few people who said, we want to be available to pray with people. And so they set up a few little stations of giving out water and saying, come and talk to us, we'll pray with you. They didn't know what kind of response they would have to that invitation, but there were people who responded and said, thank you so much for being here, for being willing to pray with us, to care about the community that we live in. And more people began coming for prayer, and more people began coming to offer prayer. That response on the part of just a few people that grew made me wonder, what might we as people of the United Methodist Church in Whitefish Bay offer for our community that would be a healing experience for people? Where does your courage come from? Would you have the courage to do something like offer prayer in the Sherman Park neighborhood? Do you have a dependable source of courage? Can you name it? Can you draw on that courage at the drop of a hat? Or when you hear that invitation to do something that you think is courageous, do you go into emergency mode? I think it's important for us to stay prayed up. I think it's important for us to continue to be saturated in the stories that we hear from the scriptures. That's part of why this summer we're offering you this opportunity to be introduced to these courageous characters from the Bible. These people are our foreparents in the faith. We have their DNA in us as people of faith. We need to remember that their stories are our stories. Their courage is available to us today, whatever it is that we're facing today. Whether it be a health crisis or a difficulty with a child in our family or the loss of a loved one, whatever it is that's challenging our faith, that's causing us to need the courage, these characters are there to help us, to draw the courage from them. I just encourage you to get to know these characters and to really see that they're ordinary people that God was able to use in very courageous ways. Remember that these people are our family. In our family, you know, there are family names. My brother James was very important for our family. He's my older brother. And of course, now there's a nephew who's been named for James. It's kind of like carrying the courage that James showed in his life. We have the same way of adopting these characters from the Old and New Testament to carry their courage, to carry their faith in our lives today. Maybe God is choosing you for some courageous act, for some important task. I just encourage you to nourish your faith, to be ready when the call is, when the invitation is given. You may not live to be 175, but believe me, even when we get older, God invites us to be instruments, to be courageous. And I invite you to stay in that relationship with God, to continue to communicate, and to ask, where, God, would you use me? May that be so for you.